So some people have asked me to speak about death. So I want to speak about that tonight. And I remember when I heard some teaching about death quite a few times, I really did not like the perspective to hear a Dhamma talk about death. I thought there may be something more interesting or funny than death. As if speaking about death would be something that would make us sad. But if we come to the teaching of the Buddha constantly, he says that he's teaching only suffering and the end of suffering. So when we speak about death, it is for the end of suffering, not that we will be all depressed after that. And it is linked, if we imagine reflection on death, and if it is not linked with impermanence, then it does not make sense, or then we are stuck in our representation and we cannot go beyond. So I think what frees death from its heaviness is impermanence. Impermanence is, or the reality of impermanence is what free death from its burden. There may be two motivations for thinkers to engage in thinking and reflection. One may be wondering about the world and its mystery and its complication and or complexity, so they may try to understand it. There is a deep concern with the law of the world, the structure, to try to figure it out, and reflection on the cosmos and on nature and everything. So that's one motivation, and that has given rise to much philosophy and science. Let's discover the law of nature. How fantastic. And some other thinkers are motivated by something quite different. Not so much by the harmony of the world, the law of nature, but they are concerned with the human condition. So they don't so much care about this cosmology and so on. What they want to reflect on is the human condition. And usually when they reflect on the human condition, it's not on what is so nice and cool. They reflect on the difficulty. And that the motivation for their meditation and reflection. And in Western philosophy, we had in the last century a lot of thinkers that really took anxiety, despair as at the beginning of their reflection and meditation. It is clear that the Buddha belonged to the second category, that he really was not interested in the Vedic tradition with all their speculation, quite amazing speculation about cosmos, about the nature and about gods, and that he was not interested by that. What he's really wanting to discover is a human condition, and to discover if there is a way that one can be free from this human condition. So in the Tibetan tradition, clearly, reflection on death is always linked with that on impermanence. And I think that is very important. When Sariputra was looking for a spiritual path, he had developed all the type of concentration, a type of concentration, but he saw that did not lead to freedom. So he went back to his town, which was Rajgiri, with Murgayana, and he was wondering, you know, who can show a path to freedom. And one day in the market, he saw a monk that seems to be so peaceful. So he went to him and said, "So, what is your teaching? What is it that you are practicing?" And this monk was a main disciple of the Buddha, somebody completely competent, but he said, "What I understand is nothing but my teacher. My teacher, he teaches the arising of phenomena and the disappearance of phenomena." And Sariputra immediately had a deep realization of impermanence. He said that then he reached the first stage of freedom. So in this nutshell, we see some essential part or aspect of the teaching of the Buddha. Arising of phenomena and the disappearance of phenomena. And this sentence is very well known. I remember in Valley in Ladakh, in the Nubra Valley, arriving at a monastery, quite nice monastery, and on the entrance of the temple, this sentence was written in Tibetan. It's quite amazing. We find that in the earlier sutra, and there it was quite a modern monastery. The abbot, I think, the abbot was Rizong Rinpoche, very well known, very well trained, a geshe that chose to write that on the door. The Buddha teach the arising of every phenomena and their disappearance. So that, in a nutshell, that's what impermanence is about. If we don't link death with impermanence, then we cannot understand it. Then it starts to be something that is strange. Freud said that death is an enigma, and that something is strange. That when somebody has died, we whisper. How this person has realized a magical trick. How this person disappeared. You know? He, she was here before and now no more. And that's exactly what is strange. How can a person be here and then the next instant not be here? There is something that we cannot understand. Something very strange. Georges Bataille said that death revealed the imposture of reality. Death revealed the imposture of reality. It means that if death is true, the way we see reality is not the way that we see it. There is something that does not work. And I think that way impermanence will be very important. And in a sense, we've solidified death. You know, there's so many stories, image of death, with specific names, as if it was some kind of being. You know, we see that in painting of Dürer or Bosch or something like that, in many painters. So you see this representation of death, which is quite frightening. So even if we don't have such a clear representation, it has some kind of personality, as if death would be ever personality outside of life. Death is coming to seek for you. Where does it come from, you know? But then it's frightening, of course. So we have plenty of those representations and words. I don't know, in English, how you mention death, you know, in French we have, of course, many expressions of that, that give it some personality. But that's, of course, something that we imagine. And then we are scared, like if we were scared of our own shadow. So there is something like that, and it's so difficult to be very rational about death, because it seems that However we may try to think about it, it doesn't seem that it works very well. It's something that we cannot really grasp. Especially when we make something out of it, and then we wonder, I cannot grasp. In a sense, we make, there's an imagination, and then we say, well, but I cannot grasp that. Of course, because it is our own creation. The time after the death of someone that we love, and sometimes even we don't love so much, we don't love so much, but there is this time of grieving. And we may wonder, what does it mean and how does it end? Can be longer, can be short. But grieving may be the time that we need to face reality. As long as we don't want to face reality that this person is no more, then we are in this confused situation where we know that this person is no more, but we don't want to face this reality. And this is very painful, very painful. This unwillingness to face reality. But of course it's very difficult when people come to see you and they are sad and grieving, and you cannot say, oh, you know, just a matter of facing reality, because it's a bit sharp, you know. But that what Freud said. Freud said that grieving is a time necessary to face reality. And it comes down to that. And it may take time, more time or less time. But at one point then we let go of this confusion that is holding this person that is no more as still existing somewhere, that we still have some kind of duty with respect to this person. That we cannot do that to them. But what is this them at this time? No more. And that is this reality that we need to face. Or if we think about our own death, it seems that death is stealing away from us some life span that we will not be able to use. Well, there was still that, you know, wait, there was some life span that I should be able to use. So death comes and then that is taken away, like heavy rain can wash away, you know, a mud road ahead, so the rain wash it away. So death is taking this lifespan that we were supposed to have. So it robs us away from something. Then there's frustration. But of course, this lifespan that is ahead, where does it exist? Where it is? Doesn't exist. We've explored that today. What is after does not exist. So this lifespan does not exist. So we are not being robbed from or of anything. In meditation, sometimes meditator can realize, you know, rising and passing away of every phenomena. See that in a very precise way, arising and passing away phenomena very fast. This is not my experience. I have many friends with this experience, but that's not my experience. But what cover impermanence is concept, is a framework of time. So that when we start to see that this framework of time has no reality, then so what veils impermanence is a concept, the framework of time. So if we realize that those are concept, then we can free ourselves from this confusion. Doesn't mean necessarily that we need to see rising and passing away of phenomena, but when we realize the confusion that is linked with the reality we give to time, then we can free ourselves from that, and that will be linked with the reflection on death. We've explored that, of course, today. This anticipation, the way we seem to give reality to what will come, to what is next. So to reflect on impermanence, it may be important to see that there is, if we look to the past, so to speak, there is nothing. It's not that there's just something there to the past, and there's just something there to the future. If we look there to the future, so to speak, there is nothing. We look to the past, there is nothing. So it's not that the present is one dot on the line of time. You know, this line of time comes from long, long ago, the past, and will go hopefully very far in the future, and then there is this dots of that is lightening up of present. There's no line, which is strange. There is no line of time. If we are exploring freedom, of course our habitual vision has to be challenged, because we cannot keep exactly the same vision of the world and then find freedom, because this vision is what is conditioning us. It's not reality that is conditioning us, it's our confusion about reality. And what deep confusion about reality is the notion of temporality. So if we imagine that there is nothing before, nothing after. So there is no life span that we can be robbed of. There's nothing there that can be taken away from us. Again, that's what we're exploring here. Not giving reality to what is gone, not giving reality with that which is not here. And then we discover there is very little reality left for that which is present. It's not that suddenly, we will see that suddenly there is something very special of this being present. So when we link impermanence with the reflection on death, we see that there is arising, disappearing, arising, disappearing, and no arising. Nothing has been taken away, it's just no more arising. Okay. That's very simple. So that really, of course, challenges very much our vision of the world. It doesn't mean that we should not use the framework of time. We have a schedule here and we are using it, but the problem is that we give it reality, concrete reality. And then we are bound by that. We imagine a cage, the cage of temporality, and then we wonder where did we put the key? Banging again that. Of course, we are not alone in this cage of temporality, so everybody says, but that's fine, you know, just there's a nice seat here, why don't you sit here, just enjoy. But still, this is the bars of our cage. This is temporality, mainly. There are other confusions, but temporality is very, very important. If we were to question the notion of self without temporality, just this instant, there is no instant before, neither after. So the notion of self is very, very light. It has not a long history. It has only the history that I can remember now. But that's just a memory. So it does really lead to a deep unconditioning. And we may understand why Sariputra felt so free after realizing this impermanence, if it is the way that he realized just from this sentence by the disciple of the Buddha. To give another quotation from Bhattacharya, he said, in other words, it is clear that the need for duration conceals life from us. The need for duration is hiding life from us. So as soon as we put our experience, our life, in the framework of time and duration, that is hiding life. Then we live in this abstract world that has duration. And then there is frustration because something is missing. Now we find that, of course, in the earlier sutra. I was trying to find a few lines from the earlier sutra, from the Sutta Nipata, expressed in all type of language, but it says, dry up what pertains to the past, let there be nothing afterward. If you do not grasp in the middle, you will live in peace. We get exactly that. Not so much speaking about some kind of rising and vanishing very fast. It just say, dry up what pertains to the past. Don't hold to what is past. Representation. Let there be nothing afterward. If you do not grasp in the middle, you will live in peace. I give you the next line from the Sutta Nipata. One who does not claim as mind anything physical or mental, who does not sorrow over what is non-existent, truly is not lost in the world, does not sorrow over what is non-existent. But it is challenging. And again, when we speak about somebody that is grieving, it's always very difficult to be so much matter of fact. You know? No, I cannot do that to him, to her. So that's fine. I mean, if the person cannot face reality at this time, that's fine. The person will take time. But to tell stories, I don't know about the person will be here or there. I don't know if it does help, really. I'll get another quotation from Nagarjuna. said life has no beginning, no end. It has no before or after. No beginning, no end. It has no before or after. This is challenging. So we play with that in our exploration. No before, no after. And that really is freeing. But it is, I think, interesting for us to explore in situation. No before, no after. When I bring my hand to rest on the shoulder of another person, without a before, without an after. So it's always exactly where it is. The contact with the shoulder of the other person is not yet there. The last step is gone. I did not want to give the full quotation of Simone Weil because it's so beautiful, but just what she said, you know, time does not exist, yet we are bound by it. Time does not exist, yet we are bound by it as long as we cling to it. So she said, we are bound by something that does not exist. And that's why we can be free, because if we were bound by something that exists, forget about it, there's no freedom. So we can only be free if what we are bound by is does not exist. And this question of temporality, I think, is arising in any mystical tradition. Philosophical also, but mystical. Don't want to give many quotations, but Master Eckhart said, let go of personality, let go of multiplicity, and also duality, and let go of temporality. It's very, very clear. It's not only something very special in the Buddhist tradition, this letting go of temporality, because I think in our experience of meditators, mystic and yogi, the seeing through the notion of temporality, I think, is very clear. Yet, what we can make of that may be slightly different. There's a beautiful passage in the Mahabharata, in this war, and Bhishma, the great warrior, is wounded, is about to die, and Yudhishthira, the great warrior of the other side, go and see him, and he never wanted this war, so he's very fed up, and he cannot stand any warrior from either side being killed. So he's really tired, and it's very touching, because you see they are tired of this war that none of them wanted. And this great, great warrior, Bhishma, is about to die. And Yudhishthira said, I have heard spoken about eternal youth, who said that death does not exist. Can you tell me what you mean? Death does not exist. And Bhishma said, well, just ask him. So he turns his head and he sees this beautiful young person, because of course he's an eternal youth. And he said, well, did you say that death does not exist? Yes, I said. But people and the philosopher and all the sages are doing rituals for other life. He said, yes, that's true, that they're right. But I say that death does not exist. And death is distraction, scattering, and vigilance and presence, that is eternity. So for him it come to that. The beyond distraction, beyond this framework of conceptuality that lead to the eternal present. That what we get in the Mahabharata. But in the Buddhist tradition, will say there is still confusion there. Something is made out, and this way of being beyond temporality, something is made out of it. And that is a bondage, very subtle bondage, but that is a very strong bondage. And we meet that very often. There's some confusion about that, and believing that if you get rid of past and future, and then there is this eternal present where there is totality, wholeness, or whatsoever. But this is holding to something. And it is so important to recognize it. Sometimes people do experience that in their meditation, and then they are pleased, and that's fine, because it's already a very deeply peaceful meditation. But to take that for freedom in the Buddhist tradition, this is a big mistake. And I think maybe Vimalakirti will reveal that. Not the only one, of course. I find many, many sutra, early sutra, that will also reveal that. There is still an holding to something. Holding to presence, open. Also with that subject and object, that's fantastic. And there is this holding to that and believing that is freedom, but that is not. It's not bad. Huh? I meet sometimes some people that seem to be very much into that space. Not bad. I think it's quite a beautiful space to be in. A space of apparent freedom. But I think if we want to go deeper, we'd see that there is a subtle bondage that may give rise to all the other bondage, and that is what the Buddhist tradition reveals. This is a very fine bondage, very subtle, but that the root and the ground for all the other bondage to arise. Once that is true, then all the other bondage can arise. Because there is a ground of truth, and from that, or reality, true reality, and from that, all the other bondage can arise. And only when realize there is no ground of reality, then no other bondage can arise, or not anymore. And we will see that maybe in a few days, approaching Vimalakirti, to explore that aspect, and the Madhyamaka philosophy that may give us some light, and also linked with the earlier sutra. So that's a few words I wanted to say about death, but I think it's very freeing if you link that with impermanence and realize in your meditation, in our exploration, that there is nothing before, nothing after. So that death is not taking away anything. It's just a non-arising. Arising, disappearance, no arising. So it's rather, I think, freeing than depressing. Mm-hmm.